introduce Dr. Danielle Shanahan. Danielle works at Zealandia, and she's been back in Wellington. She's a local person, been overseas in Australia for a long time studying, and she's come back not only to be the head of research at Zealandia, but also with a fascinating research base that informs why she can be so passionate about Zealandia. So I'll hand over to Danielle to tell you all about that.
Lovely. Now, traditionally, I'm not much of a podium speaker. I tend to do a lot of arm waving. Hopefully, that doesn't impact on the quality of my presentation this evening. But, so I'm a manager of conservation, research, learning, and experience up at Zealandia. I'm from Wainuiomata originally, but as Jan mentioned, I've been away for roughly 20 years or so. So it's a long time, but it's quite wonderful being back in Wellington. It's such an amazing collaborative environment, and people are totally into nature here, which is really neat. So yeah, I'm going to give you a little bit of hopefully we'll finish in a bit of a positive note. I'm going to give you a bit of a dance through the scene, which is the connection between people, nature and health. And we'll look at some solutions to creating more space and time for nature in your life towards the end of the presentation. Nature really, I guess, is our lifeblood. For me, it's an important part of my spirituality. Speaking from a more economic sense, it gives us our fresh water, filters water, takes the pollutants out, provides a base for our livelihoods. So our soils are fundamental to our economy, fundamental to our dairy industry, to all those sorts of farming practices that we've got going on in New Zealand. So it really is a fundamental part of the New Zealand economy. And in fact, any economy in the world is ultimately based usually on some sort of natural resource at its core. My particular interests are really around health and well-being. So I'm an ecologist by training, so my PhD's in ecology, but my view on the sciences is more of a holistic view. So I feel passionately that the different sciences are connected. Sciences are connected to the humanities, and all of these things work together to make the world a better place. So the connection between people, nature and health has really been a topic of sort of dedicated scientific study for a very long time. We see it in early Greek writings, it comes right throughout human history. But in modern times, we see one of the earliest studies in about 1979. Now this study, what it did was it looked at people recovering from gallbladder surgery in hospital. It did a lovely little randomised study. It put a bunch of people in a room with a view of trees out the window, a bunch of people with a view of a brick wall out the window. The people with a view of trees actually got out of hospital a day or two quicker. So it was the first indication that not only is this a nice to have, but in fact, it can be fundamental for our economy, because you imagine the cost of keeping people in hospital a day longer could be reduced. You know, as simple as that. So since then, we've seen a bit more of a plethora of studies coming out, and we have a huge range of health and well-being benefits that are starting to develop in terms of evidence in the literature. So on one side of this little figure, we see declines in mental fatigue. So that means your cognitive function increases with experiences of nature. We see reductions in stress and blood pressure, and also see reductions in cardiovascular disease. In fact, to the point where you see lower levels of mortality from cardiovascular disease in neighbourhoods that are greener. So that's quite a marked finding. That was one of a pretty pioneering study. Now, on the other hand, we see a lot of improvements. Like, as I mentioned, we see improvements in our cognitive function, so we can think better in a more relaxed fashion. Improves our mental health, so we see lower rates of depression and anxiety. And also our social well-being. So getting out into our local neighbourhood green space makes us connect with our neighbours. We see who's around. We see the sort of lay of the land, if you will. Of course, the other benefit of that is physical activity, which I'm not going to go into too much detail here. You can see there's a huge range of ways that we gain benefits from our natural environment. I know that probably a lot of this is quite intuitive to you. So, of course, nature is really good for our health and well-being. But it's quite interesting that we're seeing statistics like this. This is from my own research, which shows that about 60% of people really, if ever, get out into green space. And that's going for a dedicated walk in a green space. Now, this is research from Brisbane, but I've replicated it in the UK, and we see almost the same statistics. So this is starting to come up quite frequently. Of course, there's a range of reasons for this. We've got a long commute often, we've got a huge range of activities, life's so busy. Kids need to go from one activity to another, extracurricular things going all over the place. But it suggests that something's changing in our lives. It means nature isn't quite having the place that we might like it to. Another slightly more scary statistic is this one, which is in New Zealand, children spending on average 50 hours in front of screens per week, which is a phenomenal amount. That's more time than I spend at work. So this is quite an incredible statement. As Helen mentioned earlier, of course, having a tree in your neighbourhood costs money, but we're making trade-offs here. We're making real trade-offs. We might not be spending money on that tree or going to see that tree, but we're spending money somewhere else, and that's our investment in time and these other activities. Okay, it's leading to changes in other parts of our lives, interesting. So this is a really interesting little story reported in The Guardian just up here. It's changes in the Oxford Junior Dictionary. So, you know, our ABCs, we have words that we learn our ABCs with. We used to learn A is for acorn. Now we learn, I believe, A is for Apple computer. Slightly different natural thing. And B is for buttercup. I think there it highlights B is actually for broadband. So this change really created a bit of an outcry across the UK at the time. But we're seeing these sorts of changes in our priorities infiltrating every aspect of our life. Now, another aspect that I find quite intriguing is this change in the way we design our suburbs. So on the left-hand side is a suburb that was designed in the early 1900s. This is an Auckland suburb. You can see there that the house footprints are pretty small. They're about 30% of the lot that they sit on. Fast forward to the year 2000, the suburb was developed. You can see the house covers the majority of the block, leaving a little space for the swimming pool or the trampoline. But not a lot of space for that tree that we might like to have climbed when we were a kid. So this is an interesting shift. It seems like nature is becoming a luxury that we're not necessarily making the most of. Now, I think none of you will be surprised to know that actually these trends also follow socioeconomic patterns. So the suburb on the left, the average house price of that one was about $1.5 million. On the right-hand side, that suburb, the average price was around, you know, house and land package, $600,000. So this housing on the right is affordable. This is what people are choosing, and this is what's accessible. So here again, nature is a luxury. Those big trees are a luxury. Now, that's me for doom and gloom. I'm going to move forward now, looking ahead. I'm really interested as a researcher and from a personal level in how we make nature experiences more accessible. How do we make them more accessible and more preferred? How do we make them part of people's lives? Now, just a little exercise for you. You know, I've started breaking nature exposure down. This is becoming a bit reductionist, I know, but it helps me think about nature, helps me quantify it, which is a little bit scary in some respects, but sometimes we're forced to do these things. But thinking about exposure to nature like you would physical activity. So I'd like a show of hands. Who here manages to get out into some sort of green space once a month? Okay, so that's most of you. Once a week, keep your hand up. Cool, okay, once a day. Great, okay. Now for duration, hands up if you manage to get out for 30 minutes or more a week. And that's most of you. A day? Okay, we're doing pretty well. Okay, finally for intensity, hands up if you manage to get to a place like Zealandia or the bush somewhere. Yeah, once a week? Yep, cool. All right, once a day. Anyone? Cool. So we start to see that we can actually look at how we might enhance our exposure to nature across these different dimensions. Interestingly, my research is showing that there are thresholds in these things. So, for example, in terms of frequency, getting out, making that dedicated trip about once a week is actually enough to have a major effect on our health, particularly in terms of our levels of depression and our levels of high blood pressure in society. In terms of duration, getting out for 30 minutes a time is much better than just 10 minutes. So that is enough to really significantly impact on the chances of depression and high blood pressure as well, and a whole range of other outcomes. These aren't tiny effects either. What we're looking at is effects that are equivalent to, for example, reducing obesity in society in terms of the impact on health and wellbeing. So they're not marginal changes that we could actually really enhance population health in this way. So that's some of the way that my research is going, is starting to think about nature and those different elements and how they affect our health and wellbeing. Okay, so just to finish off, I just wanted to talk a few different ways that we can think about to actually enhance our exposure to nature. I saw this really great article come out recently, and it went through, the Couch Potatoes Guide to Saving the World. And it was it talked about sustainability and things that you can do from your couch. So thinking about that in terms of nature exposure, there are a couple of little things you can do around your house that have marked and scientifically proven benefits to your health and wellbeing. Put up a pot plant and a picture. You know, just something as simple as having a picture of nature on the screen on your computer. It can actually, it's just enough to just start having an effect on your health and wellbeing. You know, as manager of Zealandia, though, that's not quite enough for me. I'd like to push it a little further. But we can look at things like nature-based gardening. So this is a classic backyard in a lot of places. I'm doing house shopping at the moment, and this is incredibly prevalent and seems to be something that people want. But why not something a bit more like this? So every time you walk out your front door, you're getting that little dose of nature that can just enhance your health and well-being along the way. And look at the kind of biodiversity habitat that you might provide in that environment. Look at maybe replanning your route to work, taking a slightly different turn through a greener street or through a park, again, has a marked impact on your well-being. Finally, taking it to level 3, so this is really getting out there, you know, trying to do some green exercise like this lovely walking group at Zealandia. You know, finding a way to create some green exercise in your life. Green exercise compared to exercise, for example, in the gymnasium or on a treadmill, massive benefits across a range of different outcomes. And finally, you know, taking it really the next level is some conservation volunteering. So coming to a place like Zealandia and getting stuck in and really just engaging with that environment. They all have some impact on your health and wellbeing. So just to highlight, I think it's a little bit scary sometimes to go, well, you know, I have to add this whole other thing to my life. I have to create this whole other space in my life for something quite, you know, which isn't easy to achieve, but there are little things that you can do that can just add value. So finally, just to end, I just wanted to make a little comment regarding those trends that we talked about earlier, particularly regarding the socioeconomic biases and access to nature and how we might make that something part of everyone's life rather than just a select few. I'm particularly interested in a research front and how we create parks that aren't just appealing to your traditional European background. You know, that's the mown lawn, maybe a little bit of a hedge or a few scattered trees. I'm really interested in how your background and how the way you grew up actually shapes your preferences for parks, particularly in urban landscapes, and how that and whether those special designs that are tailored to you from wherever you're from might actually influence the way you get out and engage. An interesting example of this is I've been working with some researchers at Vic Uni in the Landscape and Architecture faculty, looking at whether creating a wellness walk focusing on Māori and Raroa plants, so medicinal plants, plants that have some benefit, whether creating that sort of environment might actually encourage people from a different demographic to get out and go engage with that space. So there's different ways of thinking about this, different ways of thinking about it from a council perspective and a neighbourhood perspective. From Zealandia's point of view, I have an education team at my disposal. They're pretty incredible. They engage around 10,000 kids per year. But one of the things that we're doing at the moment is we have a particular focus on Wainuiomata. So bringing kids from Wainuiomata, we've managed to get funding that pays for their bus fares and brings them out to Zealandia for a special education experience. We follow that up with education experience in their own backyard, so teaching them how to create a special little sanctuary in their special places, in their backyard, in their schools. So making that something that perhaps they prefer, perhaps they learn is achievable and can be done in their own places. So I'm going to leave it like that, but we'll highlight that these things do take time, and as Helen highlighted, we have a 500-year vision, so we aren't looking in the short term. I think all of these things, bringing nature back into our lives, will take time and will take gradual shifts. We shouldn't worry about everything and panic about everything right now, because there is hope.
Hey, so I'm really impressed with the idea of time, intensity and duration as a measure of how much time I get in the outdoors. And once again, I wonder what you made of that. A couple of minutes to talk to your neighbour and reflect on what you've heard.